the music. Cut the music.
I think I got my swagger back. Oh, oh, oh.
Spectacular group of men. You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Oh, the band is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone.
There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Like poison. Like rat poison.
Are you going to listen to me or are you going to listen to these guys?
And welcome to the College Football Country podcast. My name is Josh Parcell, the founder of College Football Country, the website cfbcountry.com, and of course the podcast right here. Thank you guys so much for listening and subscribing. Appreciate all of you. And today my guest, Aaron Torres. Now, if you don't know Aaron, go check him out on Twitter, Aaron_Torres. He works for Fox Sports Radio, used to work with me at Fox Sports One, does a great job hosting a bunch of radio shows. We don't always agree on everything. I've gone at Aaron plenty of times on Twitter, and it's been a lot of fun, but that's what this is all about. Great debate. And we actually agree on plenty in the podcast today. So I think you guys will enjoy it. We get into plenty of SEC talk, talking Alabama, talking Auburn, Texas A&M, of course, Georgia, where I was on Saturday, and just a ton of fun. We also get into some Pac-12 stuff with Stanford. And did I mention it's a lot of fun? I think I've said that like 8 times. So all, if nothing else, it's going to be a lot of fun. On Wednesday, I'm going to do an ACC podcast. It's going to be a weekly deal coming up for the rest of this season. Kyle Bailey, potentially another guest as well. Got some big names coming down the stretch for you guys. So talking ACC, middle of the week, Virginia Tech, Clemson, everybody else. Don't worry, we'll get to everyone on that podcast every week. That is Wednesdays, but every Monday we'll be recapping the week that was in college football. So thanks again so much for listening. Do me a favor, guys. You guys were great last year about going to give the show a rating, a review. If you listen on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever it is, go give it a 5-star review. That really, really helps me out. Trying to boost the listeners on this show, and the best way to do that is by getting a rating from you. So if you can give a 5-star rating, leave a review. Do me a favor. In your review, tell me the most random college football athlete you can remember. I did this on Twitter a couple weeks ago, and it was amazing. You guys came up with the most ridiculous names. Porkchop Womack was my favorite, he's off limits. But anybody else, go put it on the review. Leave a review. Tell how much you love the podcast, and also tell me your most random college football player you can think of ever since you've been alive. I want to know. Send it to me, and I will be forever grateful. So thank you so much. Now on to Aaron Torres. Again, you can catch him on Fox Sports Radio. He also hosts the Aaron Torres Sports Podcast, and he also covers college basketball as well. So be on the lookout for him coming up in the next few months. But right now, we're talking college football with Aaron Torres. And now I welcome on Aaron Torres to the College Football Country Podcast. You can catch him on Fox Sports Radio all the time, as well as the Aaron Torres Sports Podcast. We've had a lot of great guests on there recently, and I'm happy that you can be a guest on mine, Aaron. So welcome to the show.
Yeah, Josh, nice to be joining you, man. Another Saturday of college football. It was typical college football Saturday. You know, you look at the schedule, didn't feel like there was a lot that was going to intrigue us. And, of course, it was an incredible Saturday as always. So, you know, man, I'm happy to join you.
Yeah, thanks, man. Well, let's jump right into it. I want to talk SEC first. I feel like one of the biggest stories that we're going to be asking all season long is who's better between Georgia and Alabama. I was in Columbia yesterday. I saw Georgia roll over the Gamecocks. Honestly, what I expected to see. I mean, Georgia just is in a different class than South Carolina or really anybody else in the conference outside of the Tide. And, of course, Alabama's done what Alabama always does. They've rolled through the first two games. But now, I mean, you're seeing this as a rematch of the national championship game. Two great teams who I think might be even better this year. I know it's only 2 weeks, Aaron, but do you get a sense of which team you think is better at this point? And then just generally, what do you make of these two teams right now?
Yeah, you know, I don't know who's definitively better. Frankly, I don't think anybody knows who's definitively better. But I will say this, Josh, is that, you know, I was on the couch on Saturday getting ready for my show. I wasn't in person like you were, but I was just blown away at how good Georgia is, the speed, the athleticism, really both sides of the ball, but, you know, specifically defensively. And I think everybody listening knows, you know, South Carolina is really good. I don't know, top 15, top 20, top 25. But, I mean, that's a team that's going to finish probably in second place in the SEC East, probably the fourth, fifth best team in the SEC. And so to watch Georgia do what they did, I think it gave me a new opinion on what their ceiling was. You know, I'll be honest, and look, we all – spend way too much time in the offseason trying to figure out exactly what, you know, every team and what it all means. But with Georgia, you know, I kind of sat there and said, you know, were they the beneficiary of some, you know, some, I guess, breaks, for lack of a better term, at this time last year? You know, you never want to see an injury, but I think Jacob Eason getting hurt may have been the best thing for that program. It allowed Jake Fromm to slide into that quarterback spot. They had a lot of guys last year come back to, you know, that could have gone to the NFL draft, Sony Michel, Nick Chubb, some of the guys on defense. And so I say that to say is that I was high on Georgia coming into the year, but I wasn't like what you just said. They may be better than they were last year, but you look at this team, you look at the way they dominated on Saturday, and I'll tell you this, is, and I put this out on Twitter, is I, you know, Alabama's really good. We all get that. But if I had a vote in the AP poll today, you know, the day after week two ended on Sunday, I would vote Georgia number one. No disrespect to Alabama, no disrespect to Louisville, the team they beat on a neutral field, but I think the way that Georgia beat South Carolina in Columbia, to me, that was the most impressive thing really anybody has done in college football so far this year. And I think right now I would say Georgia is the best team in the country I've seen, even though obviously, as you know, you never really count out Alabama out of pretty much anything.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I actually have Georgia number one right now also, and that's purely based on what we've seen. I mean, if you ask me who do I think would win in a game right now, I think Alabama would probably win. But given what we've seen from Georgia, I mean, to go on the road and beat South Carolina, that's more impressive than anything Alabama's done. Alabama's blown out two teams, but Louisville on a neutral field is not nearly as impressive to me as blowing out South Carolina in their stadium. That's a tough environment. So, of course, I give the nod to Georgia. At the same time, I mean, you talk about how much better this Georgia team is than last year. Offensively, I think they're absolutely better. I mean, you talk about Jake Fromm, of course, being a year older. DeAndre Swift and Elijah Holyfield formed just as good of a 1-2 punch as what Sony Michel and Nick Chubb did a year ago. I mean, and I know that they were tremendous, but Georgia's running game hasn't skipped a beat. And then the receivers are better than last year. I think that's the difference with this team compared to last year, is now Riley Ridley's a year older. Mecole Hardman had 2 touchdowns yesterday against South Carolina, and that dude has SEC speed on top of SEC speed. He is an absolute burner. They've got so many guys that just wow you athletically. This team is starting to, I think, is a faster team on offense than it was a year ago. You're starting to see that. But they're built a lot like Alabama. I mean, that's what Kirby Smart has done, right? I mean, he has taken the exact Alabama mold, and he's taken it to Athens, and it's already working. And the defense was the question going into this year. They lost so many starters. Roquan Smith, of course, the guy that we were worried about. But they're just as fast as they were a year ago. They're just as good sideline to sideline. South Carolina only moved the ball really on a couple possessions, and Georgia had a couple big takeaways. Rather, the pick six early was a big one. So, you know, I love what Georgia brings to the table. I guess I would ask you this: if you were to go, who do you think is the better quarterback? If you had to, I mean, I think we all would say Tua, right?
Yeah, I would say Tua. You know, I think he's more dynamic. But look, I mean, you know, as we all sit here on an NFL Sunday, I mean, you know, obviously you and I are recording right now during this Packers, you know, Packers-Bears game. Aaron Rodgers is a little bit more of a dynamic athlete, but that doesn't mean that, you know, Tom Brady can't do some things, you know, even though he can't move. And look, obviously, look, it's I'm not comparing Jake Fromm to Tom Brady. I'm not comparing Tua to Aaron Rodgers. But, yeah, I mean, to answer your question, I would say that probably Tua, because of his versatility, because of the plays he can make with his feet, probably a little bit better. But, man, does Jake Fromm, I mean, he's just – so good at what he does, and I do give him credit because he seems to be comfortable in his own skin and his own capabilities.
Yeah, and he fits that Alabama mold prior to Tua, at least, of being that game manager. He's probably not going to win you a ton of games with his arm, but he does everything that you need him to do. And with the running game that they've got, I mean, Georgia's going to cruise. If you look forward to their schedule, it's really not that daunting. They do have Auburn towards the end of the year. LSU on the road looks a lot tougher today than it did 2 weeks ago. But I think that Georgia is on a collision course for Alabama, of course. Now, I guess the last question before we move on from Alabama-Georgia is, if you look at this, tell me what you think, Aaron. I'm thinking if the SEC wants to get two teams into the playoff again, I think the best chance they have for that to happen is for Georgia to go undefeated and for Alabama to actually lose to Georgia in the SEC championship game. Both teams need to run the table, but I think they're more likely
if Alabama is the one-loss team as opposed to Georgia? Because actually, I think Alabama's schedule right now looks a little bit tougher. They have Auburn just like Georgia. They have LSU just like Georgia. But they also have Mississippi State. I think that game provides an extra quality win that Alabama would theoretically have at the end of the year. I think the best chance for the SEC to get two in is if Georgia's the one who actually wins the conference and Alabama falls short in the SEC title game. What do you think?
It's a great question. You know, I hadn't really given it much thought. It's actually kind of funny that you say it and you kind of frame it in that context because, you know, I have a buddy who hosts radio in Tuscaloosa, and he kind of has made the argument that Louisville isn't on paper that out-of-conference opponent that Alabama traditionally has at the start of the season. I mean, look, last year it was Florida State. The year before it was USC. I mean, previous years it's been Wisconsin. And so, look, you live in the heart of ACC country. I know you know this. Louisville was picked to finish fifth in their own division this year. And so, you know, it's a long ways away from me trying to figure out how the SEC gets two teams in. I think with the way that Auburn played last week, I mean, look, could I see a scenario where if they're undefeated and Bama's undefeated or if one of them gets left out and the other one wins the SEC, like – I'll say this, is that I do think at the top of that league between Bama and Georgia, but also, man, Auburn looks so good against Washington, at least defensively. Yeah. And I think, honestly, offensively, I think a lot of their struggles were just that Washington's defense is really good. And even Mississippi State looked really good on Saturday against Kansas State. So I haven't kind of totally charted out the path to get them getting two teams in. But look, I mean, you know, I think the thing that you and me and all of us who do this every day, every year have learned is if you're sitting at 11-1, 12-1 at the end of the year and you're in a power conference, you're going to be in the conversation. And so I could see absolutely a scenario similar to last year where you go into – excuse me, mid-November, and Georgia, Auburn, Alabama, all in some form or fashion are kind of in that conversation to be in that Final Four.
Yeah, I'm a little crazy. I like to look that far ahead. It's fun.
I respect it.
Maybe not plausible, but it's fun at least. Why don't we stick in the SEC West there, and let's talk about another team that was actually very impressive, even a loss, Texas A&M. I mean, they come within that two-point conversion of knocking off, or at least taking Clemson to overtime. Lose 28-26 at home. What'd you make of the Aggies in that game?
My big thing out of that game was that for all the flack that Texas A&M got, and look, like Texas A&M became the 2017-2018 lightning rod for where are we in college athletics and, you know, $75 million guaranteed to a head coach and what does it mean? And it became the talking point of like, oh, how come the players don't get that cut of the chain? Like, put that all aside. And I think Saturday night we saw why Texas A&M was willing to pay Jimbo Fisher. And again, like, you know, put aside your personal, and I'm not saying you as in you, Josh, but like, you know, your personal opinions on like, should more of the cut go to the players, whatever. Like, look, at the end of the day in 2018, the situation is the way that it is. Texas A&M took advantage of the situation and got a national championship caliber coach to come to College Station. And so to me, that was the big thing. And look, we've all watched A&M over the last couple of years. We all know what the potential of this program is. And for whatever reason, it just hasn't clicked. And I think, look, frankly, more and more, I think we're starting to see that. Maybe that reason was that Kevin Sumlin, as much as we thought we liked him, between what we've seen with him through two games at Arizona, excuse me, and Jimbo Fisher two games, maybe it was coaching. But to me, look, I incredible job by Clemson surviving another tough road environment, incredible job by the entire A&M coaching staff for having their team ready to go in that game. But, like, my takeaway was Jimbo Fisher is going to end up being worth every penny. And, like, is he going to top Alabama? I don't know. But I do think if you give it enough time, they got the number one recruiting class on paper in 2019 right now. I feel like this is a guy that is going to build – you know, I guess for lack of a better term, a perennial contender, make things interesting in the SEC West. And I just think last night was the first night that you saw, okay, this is a completely different team than even just what we saw last season.
Well, what's crazy is I looked it up, and let's just play out the season and pretend that Clemson wins 10 or more games, which I think is a pretty safe bet at this point. If that's the case, A&M has struggled mightily against any team since Manziel left that won 10 or more games. I mean, they have lost by two possessions in almost every single one or more. A lot of times they're losing by 21 or more to these teams that won double-digit games in a Power 5 league. So when they're playing the best teams, the best competition, A&M has not even been competitive. And I know we want to make a lot of some of the fast starts that they've had under Kevin Sumlin, and people got excited, but they never really beat anybody of substance. And now coming that close against Clemson, I know it wasn't a win, of course, but at least it showed that under Jimbo, this team is ready to compete against a team like that, and they're not going to back down. And under Kevin Sumlin, quite honestly, they back down. I mean, you think about the Alabama games, the 59 to nothings, the 48 to 30s against Mississippi State's even. I mean, I'm looking at this right now. They've gotten murdered in so many big games. That was I was impressed that they stood up to the challenge. And the future is certainly bright for Texas A&M. I would – $75 million is a lot. $75 million is a lot. But if it brings you a championship, sure. And I think that at least we saw on Saturday that – Jimbo can take a team that quite honestly was overmatched and keep them standing toe to toe with Clemson. I also think that Clemson let Texas A&M back in that game by playing the quarterback battle that they did. I think if they had stuck with Kelly Bryant, I understand why they went to Lawrence. I don't blame them. But in hindsight, if Kelly Bryant plays that whole game, I don't think Texas A&M makes it to the, you know, a minute left on a 2-point conversion to have a chance to win or a chance to tie. I think that Clemson would have won that game a little more easily.
I was going to say a lot to peel back there. First of all, the thing that you said about kind of the elite, not even elite teams, but like good teams playing right. A&M, it's really funny you bring that up because I'm on in College Station every you know once a week, and one of the radio hosts asked me this past week. He said, you know, what would it mean to A&M to win this game? And I kind of flipped it on him and I said, let me ask you a question. We know what the expectations are with Jimbo Fisher. We know he's won a national championship. We know what he could potentially be capable of building there. And I said to my buddy who hosts, you know, radio on College Station, I said, would it be too much too soon if the upset happened? And I said to him, I said, look, I know you're an A&M fan. I get it. Like you obviously you want your team to win every time they take the field. Anytime you lose, it's going to be disappointment. I said, but would it be like, would it just heighten those expectations too much where it almost became unrealistic? And his answer I thought was pretty on par with you. And I found it very interesting. He said, look, you look at what we've done since we've gotten to the SEC. He said point blank, he's like, we haven't beaten Auburn at Kyle Field. And I don't remember all the statistics, but he's like, you know, we're 1-4 against Ole Miss. We're 2-3 against Mississippi. Whatever the stats are, I don't know all of them off the top of my head. But if you look at the elite, or not even the elite, the good teams in the SEC West, as you point out, Josh, it's like, they haven't even been competitive. It hasn't even been interesting. And not just when they go on the road, when they're at home too. And so I would say to you, and not to you, but like I would just say in general is that, like, I think it was totally a step in the right direction. Now, I do agree with you that I thought Dabo got cute with the quarterbacks. And, like, look, I mean, I give him credit. He said, you know, we're going to play Trevor Lawrence at this point, and this point. And he played him. But I also do think there is something to be said about A&M being in that game late. And, like, if you look at that game, like, yes, Dabo got cute with the quarterbacks. And frankly, you know, they obviously could have lost that game. But if you look at kind of the game itself, like A&M wasn't in that game because something crazy fluky. Like it wasn't like they had two pick sixes and Clemson turned the ball over five times and like they had a chance to win late. Like they were in it because they were really well coached, really well prepared. And so I just think all of that speaks to what Jimbo Fisher, you know, what I guess probably the best way to put it is like what the basement is going to be with Jimbo Fisher. Like what is the ceiling? I don't know because you're still in the same division as Nick Saban. And like, look, at the end of the day, we all know that a lot of really good coaches have been fired throughout the SEC because they can't beat Nick Saban. And like, if you're asking me, is Jimbo Fisher going to be able to topple Saban? Yeah, like probably not if Saban's around for another 4, 5, 6 years because history says nobody can do that. But what I would say is that like I think what we saw what the floor of this program is, which is hyper-competitive, play hard, well-coached, well-prepared, and that is why even though I know like you said, Parcell, like the idea that we've seen A&M kind of, you know, play these big games and look good at times, I do feel like this is different than what we saw under Kevin Sumlin.
Well, what's amazing to me, I'm looking at Kellen Mond and how he finished the year last year. The guy completed 8 passes in 3 of his last 4 games and 5 passes in the other. I mean, this guy was a project in the worst way. And for Jimbo Fisher to bring him in, I mean, the guy threw for 430 yards against Clemson, 3 touchdowns, yep. No pick. I mean, he played as close to flawlessly as you can and led the comeback drive in the end. I mean, he was collected throughout the game. Jimbo he kind of has this reputation as being that quarterback whisperer at the college level. You know what he did with Jameis Winston. He had DeAndre Francois had a great season 2 years ago under him. Jimbo has done this time and again. And it looks like he's done it again with Kellen Mond. I'm going to talk about ACC on Wednesday with Kyle Bailey. So I'm going to avoid the Clemson question with you because I want to get to some more stuff in the SEC, Aaron. I know you know the Kentucky fan base well, probably more on the basketball side than the football side. But
it's all the same. Yeah.
What is your reaction to an upset in the Swamp that honestly I think a lot of people should have seen coming? I mean, this is an experienced Kentucky team. Benny Snell, one of the more underrated running backs in the country. They've got athletes, and you're going up against a Florida team that's a little younger and also, of course, in a new system and a team that's really struggled for the last few years anyway. I was surprised that game was a 13.5-point spread. I won a lot of money on taking Kentucky. I should have taken them to just win. But what did you make, of Kentucky, and what is the state of the Wildcats program now after that win?
Yeah, credit to you because I didn't have the guts to pull the trigger only because, you talk about Florida being down and coaching, like, they've been through all this before. I mean, Urban Meyer left in 2010. They've gone through 2 coaching changes since then. And, like, I'm not going to lie. I was one of those people, I'm sure a lot of people were, that was suckered by that big win by Florida over Charleston Southern. And, like, in hindsight, it was Charleston Southern. And, like, yeah, we probably shouldn't have gotten that excited. I think to your point, credit to Mark Stoops because – he has been building this thing for a while. They have recruited really well relative to Kentucky. Frankly, they have developed really well relative to Kentucky. The thing, too, that like I think people don't realize about Kentucky is that they have had success. I mean, look, they've beaten South Carolina a number of years in a row. I mean, they've beaten Tennessee a couple times over the last couple of years, and I know you can say, like, oh, it's Tennessee. Like, of course they beat them. Like, Butch Jones and, like, Derek Dooley and whatever. Like, I get all that. But they have had these big wins. But this was, in my understanding of it, and, like, yeah, I wrote a book about Kentucky basketball, and I know the fan base pretty well. But, like, this one felt different as far as, like, yeah, you've beaten South Carolina, you've beaten Louisville in recent years, you've beaten Mississippi State, you've beaten Tennessee, but this one just felt different. This one, it felt like a monkey was off Mark Stoops' back. And, like, look, I think part of it is, like, you could see when the game went final, and Mark Stoops basically got a Gatorade bath. Like, the guys, Benny Snell was doing, post-game interviews in the locker room, at the podium, in his pads, and you could tell, like, that dude had been celebrating, and, like, good for him. So, I'd be sitting here I'd be sitting here lying if I said that I definitively saw this coming. Like, I absolutely could have seen a scenario where this happened. I think, one, it speaks to, Kentucky maybe just being better across the board than people realize. I also think it speaks to the fact that, like, Dan Mullen's got a rebuilding job ahead of him. And people, for me included, and I certainly include myself in this, for people that looked at that Charleston Southern score and thought, okay, this dude's going to flip a switch, it's going to be a lot more painful and arduous than that.
Yeah, and Florida's blown out some FCS teams before early in the year, and we've kind of gotten suckered into it. I think it happened 2 or 3 years ago. I remember it too, and it might have been McElwain's first year. But as far as Kentucky goes, we're going to find out a lot about them in the coming weeks. They get Murray State this week, but then they get Mississippi State at home and South Carolina at home, and then later they get Georgia at home. Now, I don't think they're going to be able to keep up with Georgia, but Mississippi State and South Carolina is in play. I don't think it's crazy to think that they could compete with either one of those teams, especially South Carolina. Getting them both at home, if they could somehow win both of them, and it'd be upsets, but if they could win both of those games at home, it's going to be a special season for Kentucky. I mean, you're talking 8-9 win season as the ceiling for this team. That's a step in the right direction for Mark Stoops, and that's probably about as good as you're going to get at Kentucky. I mean, what was it? 07, I believe. Wasn't that the Andre Woodson year where they beat LSU and they were America's darling? So it's been a long time since they've been in that, you know, in that discussion, but they've got a chance. Florida's a rebuilding team. Great win. Monkey off their back. That's fantastic. Good for you. Now play somebody who's not rebuilding. Let's play a built, established program. And Mississippi State is that. I mean, in 2 weeks, that's going to be a huge, huge game and huge opportunity for Kentucky. Stoops has done a great job. Benny Snell is terrific. I love the Wilson kid coming in. He's, such a phenomenal athlete at quarterback. They've got some talent. So I'm optimistic about Kentucky. That was a huge step for Stoops. But the name brand of the win probably carries a little bit more weight than the actual team that they beat. I mean, I think that I will say it will say a lot more about the Wildcats if they can get past either Mississippi State or South Carolina. Win one of those two, and I think that's a win if you're Kentucky. So win both of them, and that's gravy.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, I certainly agree with you, but I also think, like, for that fan base, and I'll say this, and I went to a basketball school. I went to UConn. And I don't know how it is in Chapel Hill right now, and you can educate me on the tenor there right now, because I'm imagining it's not very good. But I will say, like, there is something to, like, and this sounds, like, so corny and so cliche and, like, radio guy sports topic, but, like, I think just Kentucky – first of all, that win meant so much to that fan. I mean, we're talking – that was a generational win. Like, that was one where, like, the 52-year-old dad sat down with his 28-year-old kid who had never seen Kentucky. Like, it sounds lame, but it's true.
Right.
And the other thing is like, it really is at Kentucky is, like, put a great, you know, put the best product on the field you can until we get to basketball season. And so I think certainly, like, yeah, it's sweet Mississippi State and South Carolina. Then you're talking potential – whatever it is, New Year's Day, six bowl, like whatever. We're getting ahead of ourselves. But then you're looking at 9-3, 10-2. But I do think there is something to, like, they won seven games back-to-back years. Last year they won seven games in the regular season and lost that bowl game. You know, if you get to eight regular season wins and it's doable because Louisville looks terrible this year and some of the, you know, the bottom of the SEC East is as bad as it's been. You know, I do think there's something to, like, I'm just telling you, like, if they go 9-3, like, I get the idea that this Florida win isn't as impressive maybe nationally as it is locally,
right.
But I really do think there's something to, like, we beat Florida, like, if we get to 8-4 and we got this basketball team, like, that's a heck of a fall for us, man. Yeah. And so it is funny how, like, expectations change, but I do think it is relative to Kentucky. And I'll tell you what, like, you know, if they sweep that back to back, like you said, it is going to be unbelievable there, because I just think the expectations there are a little bit different, frankly, than most places in the SEC.
Yep. And that's a lot like North Carolina. The expectations are lower at the school, like Carolina, at Duke, at Kansas. I mean, that's just a reality. But unfortunately for Kentucky, they got to do it in the SEC. So it's even harder to get to those low expectations than it is for somebody like Carolina. I'm with you, man. Like I said, symbolically, fantastic day. Huge moment for Kentucky football. Realistically, what does it mean going forward? I want to see what they do in 2 weeks. But they're a good team. I had Peter Burns on a couple weeks ago. He sang Kentucky's praises. And I was a little skeptical of him at the time. Peter was right. He's smarter than me. And Kentucky looks like a little bit better than we thought. So good for Kentucky. Aaron, how about we do this? Let's talk Stanford. Because you tweeted at me a couple weeks ago about Stanford. And you sounded a little skeptical of the Cardinals.
Yeah, that's right.
So I'm not gonna do a victory lap just yet. It's only two games. But I do think that Stanford looks like they might be the best team in the Pac-12. Washington's great, and that's going to be a showdown in a few weeks when those two teams meet up. I tend to think that Stanford on paper has a better team than Washington. And of course they look dominant against USC on Saturday night. What do you make of Stanford so far this season?
Yeah, I mean, you know, my argument against Stanford, and, you know, I still think it carries weight. The thing with college football, and you know this, Josh, is, like, you know, it's the totality of the season.
Right.
It's not 1 week, 2 weeks, whatever. And I do think that it's going to catch up with Stanford, not because David Shell is not a good coach, not because they're not talented, but you look at their schedule, and in theory, three of their four toughest games are on the road. They beat USC last night, but at Oregon, at Notre Dame, and those two games happen to be in back-to-back weeks, and then at Washington to close the year. So you got three of their four toughest on the road, and then three of the final four on the road. All of a sudden, by the way, Herm Edwards' Sun Devils are—they're not a walkover out there in the desert, okay?
I mean,
I'm not going to lie and say that I had Arizona State as a team, that could knock off Stanford. I still don't think they probably will, but that was kind of my argument for Stanford more than anything. Is I do think, it's like Notre Dame, right? Like everyone got super excited about Notre Dame. Like I get the enthusiasm for Notre Dame, but like if you look at their schedule. In the last month of the season, they go to California twice and Florida once, and it's just like New York once. They play Syracuse at Yankee Stadium, and so I just think the totality of the travel is going to wear down Notre Dame at the end of the season, like it did last year. It was a great win for Stanford. Look, I mean USC. I know their fans. I do still live here in Los Angeles, where I know you lived. Is like, their fans don't really care about rebuild this and that. They think they should. They still think it's 2007 and Pete Carroll's there, and they should win every game by 30 points. But they were starting a true freshman at quarterback. They had a bunch of offensive linemen out with injuries. USC, I think, is this is not vintage USC by any stretch of the imagination. So solid win for Stanford last night. They did what they needed to do. But to kind of get back to what you were saying, I think to me what's going to be interesting with Stanford is kind of the middle chunk of their schedule, specifically by the end of this month when they have to go to Oregon and Notre Dame in back-to-back weeks.
No question. You're right. The schedule, maybe the toughest schedule of any playoff contender. I mean, I genuinely think that. You talk about what they've got to face. Really only a school like, Alabama now with the emergence of some of those schools in the SEC West might have something that rivals it. I'm down on Oregon and I'm a little down on Notre Dame. That's my opinion. I'm probably in the minority. I don't think those games are as difficult, especially the Notre Dame game. Oregon's always a tough place to play. Alton's a great venue. That's going to be difficult for Stanford, but I don't think that Mario Cristobal has Oregon ready to compete for a Pac-12 championship. He's got a great quarterback, but I don't think that Oregon across the board is nearly as talented as the Cardinal, and I don't trust Brandon Wimbush either. So those two games, while yes, on paper they look tough, and I'm not here to tell you that I'm going to guarantee victory, but I think that those games are more winnable than the rankings beside those teams' names would suggest. Notre Dame's 8, Oregon's 20 right now. Utah is a tricky one at home. I mean, the schedule, there are a lot of landmines, ton of landmines. And if we're being honest, they're probably going to get tripped up at some point. If they can get past Washington, like they can lose another game in that stretch. But if they beat Washington, sure. I think that because honestly, it's going to come down to them in Washington realistically for the Pac-12 North. And if they can have that tiebreaker, that head-to-head over Washington and make it somehow through the Pac-12 with just one loss, I think a 12-1 Stanford would get in. Because to flip the schedule question on its head, they would have a lot of quality wins. So then when you start talking about a one-loss Stanford probably fighting for the third or fourth spot to get into the playoff, if you're comparing their resume against a bunch of other teams, they're going to have, as long as nobody falls off the face of the earth here on this schedule, they're going to have a few pretty good wins to fall back on. That's kind of the beauty. It's that double-edged sword between playing a really tough schedule and playing a bunch of pansies. Because if you flip it over, think about somebody like Baylor a couple years ago, or TCU was that same season, like where you've got an easy schedule.
Well, you referenced Georgia earlier, right?
Yeah.
You referenced Georgia, yeah.
Yeah, and Washington, I think it happened to Washington, was it last year? There was one year where I guess they got in 2 years ago, but they've had an easy schedule where it's worked against them. Even Iowa was in that boat a couple years ago, ended up losing the Big Ten championship game, so it didn't matter. But that lack of schedule, strength of schedule, while it can work in your favor to win a lot of games, sometimes it works against you when you're trying to compare resumes. So it's that double-edged sword. Stanford's got a long road ahead of it. But KJ Costello is great. I saw that guy up close and personal a couple years ago when he was in high school. And he was the most impressive quarterback to me in that class 2 years ago. And nobody really knows about him because Bryce Love's the guy who gets all the headlines. And that's fine. But Costello and Arcega Whiteside and Love, maybe the best trio that nobody knows about. Maybe the best trio, period. And they've got a great defense. They always do. So I do like Stanford. If they had a more manageable schedule, I would be all on board with Stanford. But I'm with you that it's not easy, and they could very easily trip up a bunch of places because you are what your schedule is sometimes in college football. That's the name of the game.
No doubt about it, man. Yeah, no doubt about it.
So, Aaron, we're gonna have to move on. We're gonna have to wrap it up. So I'll end things there. We had a few other things I wanted to get to, but you know what? There's always next time. We'll do it again sometime soon. I appreciate you coming on, man. That was a lot of fun. And You know your Kentucky football better than probably anybody, so it couldn't have worked out better that I, for the record, I asked you Saturday morning if you want to do the podcast, and then Kentucky won, so just serendipitous timing. I'm not going to say that I predict the future, but maybe I do.
One, I think you did. Two, I'm not going to lie, I agreed to do another radio hit in Kentucky Sunday morning, and I felt like, even though like I watched the game and was prepared, I just felt like I didn't know enough. Like, I was like, you know, Googling all kinds of weird shit, excuse my language, first thing Sunday morning. They're like, oh, you know, I can't go on a Kentucky radio show the day after a historic win and not know, like, the whole history of this. But no, man, it was my pleasure. And, yeah, anytime you need me, just feel free to give me a buzz.
For sure, man. So, again, the Aaron Torres Sports Podcast, do you have any guests coming up you want to plug?
You know, I'll be honest. Nobody big as of right now. You know, I'm working on a few names like you, Parcell, you know. Sometimes you work on stuff behind the scenes and hope that it works out, but nobody big. But yeah, man, I'm talking college football. Obviously, as we get closer to basketball, I'll talk some college basketball as well. I have buddy, Nick Coffey, who hosts a radio show in Louisville, who hops on pretty much every show, and he just kind of recaps the week with me. And then, yeah, I try to bring on somebody from the outside that has some interesting perspective. So we will see if any of those big guests pop in the next few days. But nobody definitively on the schedule. But, you know, if everybody could say a small prayer for your boy Torres, that would be great.
There we go. Thoughts and prayers go out to you, Aaron. Well, I appreciate you coming on, man, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Parcell.
All right, that was Aaron Torres. Thanks again, guys, for listening. Appreciate it. And don't forget, go leave a review. Give a 5-star rating. Leave a review. I'm not a 5-star athlete, but I want a 5-star review. That's all I need from you guys. Leave that review and I'll appreciate it. Don't forget, I need a random college football name. Your favorite college football player of all time, whatever you can think of, leave it there. Porkchop Womack, Kenyon Rambo, Kajana Carter. I don't care. Just leave somebody. I'm looking for it this week on iTunes, on Stitcher, or on Spotify, also on Google Play as well. So now we've got everybody in the fold and looking forward to a tremendous season. Also, don't forget cfbcountry.com. Listen to CFB Country, or rather go to cfbcountry.com every day. I'll be writing and blogging all season long. Got the JP Top 25 coming out soon, more columns, and of course, we're buying the boat. Not a great week last week, we won't talk about it, but we're buying the boat with our picks every Friday on the site, talking gambling. So anything that you would want for a college football fan, it's right here, cfbcountry.com. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you Wednesday for the ACC podcast with Kyle Bailey.